All right. In the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. So, Georgia, do you want to read for us? So, if you can just read for us from verse 1 to verse 2.
My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body.
Okay. So does anyone remember what's happening in the Epistle of James? What's happening in this letter? Why is he writing this letter? What's going on? Anyone? What's happening in the Epistle of James?
We're talking about works and against faith.
Yeah? So he's talking, that was one of the things that's come across. What else? Yeah, beautiful. So there's contentions, there's issues, there's conflict between the rich people and the poor people. Okay, if you look at the majority of the letter thus far, it's trying to create a spirit of peace in the church. Okay, it's trying to avoid a divided church. So first he tells them, if you're rich, don't abuse the poor. If you're strong, don't abuse the weak. Okay, everything has to do with the church. Protecting the church, watching over the church. So now he says, and he starts speaking to those who wish to become leaders of the church. So he says to them, my brethren, let not many of you become teachers, i.e. leaders, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. What's the first thing that St. James does there? He says we. He says we. Lest we are going to receive a stricter judgment. So St. James is acknowledging this is talk that is also directed towards him as a teacher of the church. And he knows that by him teaching, he will be held accountable. And it's something we don't think about. Why would he say this? Why would he say this? Because everyone loves to teach. Everyone loves to be a leader. Everyone loves to have their voice praised, their voice heard. What happens if you get an auditorium and you put 10,000 Egyptians in there and you bring a microphone? What happens? Everyone gets excited. Everyone wants to say anything. And they say lakhbata. Ayya haga that comes to their heads, they say it. It doesn't need to make sense. They just speak into the microphone. Why? Everybody loves to have their voice heard. Everybody loves to feel that they're important. Everybody loves to give advice. No one loves to receive advice. But everyone loves to give advice. Why? Everyone loves to be listened to. Why? Because it's a sense of power. It's a sense of power. It's a sense of pride. It's a sense that I'm better than everybody else. I've learned other things that no one else knows. And so I'm going to teach them. I'm going to teach them. But, St. James says, if you're going to be a teacher, then that requires a high standard of behavior. A high level of behavior. And that's why he says to them, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. So teachers will receive a stricter judgment. St. John Chrysostom says, the roads to hell are paved with the heads of priests and bishops. Why? Because they know more, they've seen more, they understand more. And so when they fall, there's a much stricter judgment, there's a much harsher judgment. And that's why some of the desert fathers will say, never ever give advice unless somebody asks you to give advice. Our temptation is we see somebody, his situation's a bit vulnerable, first thing I do is give him advice. You have to do this, try this, Masharafi. You see it in mums. They have a grandmother, sees her daughter, says, no, you want to get rid of nits in the hair? You've got to get some egg and mix it with some halawa and mix it with some oil and then mix it through her hair. Okay? We love to give advice about everything. Everything we like to give advice. If you have a flat tire, your father calls you and tells you, no, you're not changing it right. You have to change it this way. You have to change it from the right-hand side of the car. You have to use the jack in this particular way. You have to support on this particular material. So the desert fathers say, don't give advice unless you're asked. There's something in that. Because there's a hidden burden in having to teach. Do you know, for example, in the beginning of the liturgy, when a bona is standing there and he's got the hamal, and the priest or the other deacon is holding the hamal in front of him, a bona does this and then points at the hamal. Do you know why? The prayer that he says is, grant, O Lord, that this sacrifice is acceptable for my sins and for the ignorance of your people. So the people are ignorant. They've just made a mistake out of ignorance. It's not even a proper mistake. But the priest has sinned. The priest has sinned. It's a much harsher judgment on the priest. So that's what St. James is saying here. He's saying, beware. Don't want to aspire to those high places. Don't want to become a teacher. Don't want to be the one that everyone listens to. Because if you are, it will come with a much, much stricter judgment. St. Arsenios, one of the desert fathers, says, many times have I regretted speaking. Many times have I regretted having spoken. But I have never regretted being silent. I have never regretted being silent. Think about it in your own lives. Have you ever thought back and said, oh, I can't believe I kept my mouth shut when they were fighting? Doesn't happen. What happens? I put my head down and say, oh, I can't believe I said that. I can't believe I said that to her. I can't believe I said that to him. I can't believe I didn't keep my mouth shut. Okay? Why? Let not many of you become teachers. Something that's very, very important. And then he says in verse 2, for we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in a word, he's a perfect man, also able to bridle the whole body. So he says to them, why? Why shouldn't you want to be a teacher? Because no one is perfect. Everybody's vulnerable. Everybody has weaknesses. Everyone has limitations. So the context here, which we're going to see in the rest of the chapter, is that of the church, and specifically the leaders of the church and their responsibility in the church, and how the leaders can either be causes of blessing for the church or causes of corruption for the church, which is something very painful for me to speak about. So this follows on from chapter 2. So he's saying to them, the tongue that is used by teachers can be destructive or it can be constructive. It can be negative or it can be positive. And he gives them five different examples, five different analogies in a very simple way to explain how that can be. First, he talks to them about a bit that is put in the mouth of a horse. Then he talks about the little rudder of a ship, then fire, then the spring of water, and then the fig tree. And in all of these analogies, you'll find three different things at play. Three different actors, if you like. One is the controller, the person that's controlling the little thing. Then there's the little thing that's being controlled, and then there's the big effect. So there's someone controlling the little thing, there's the little thing, and then there's a big effect. So let's see how that plays out. So, Mary, do you want to read verse 3? Do you know what a bit is, Mary? Yeah. So if you've seen a horse, it's always got something inside its mouth and it bites down on it and then it wraps around its head. And then whoever's riding that horse has two strings that he pulls, one on either side of the horse's head, right? And when you're riding the horse, yee-haw, and you're riding the horse, if you pull to the right, what happens? The bit that's in the horse's mouth goes this way. It's a very little movement. If you think about it, it's probably about a movement of, 30 centimeters. Little movement, the horse goes straight away that way. Okay? A little movement this way, that way. I remember when I was in Peru, there were these wild horses, and they said, let's go horse riding. And so I said, no worries, we're 8 guys. And so I went on the horse. And as I was riding, my right foot wasn't going inside the bridle on the side where you put your shoe. And so I knew I wasn't very stable. And then as I was going, the horse was going crazy. And so not realizing that a little bit of a movement can affect the movement of the horse, I yanked it. But I didn't yank it evenly. So I yanked just one side, and the horse went up to the side, threw me off when we were going at a ridiculous pace, and I had a very sore back for a very long period of time. So little bits of movement in the bit of the horse have a profound effect. A small movement in the bit can cause a large movement in the horse. The person riding the horse just has to move it a couple of centimeters and the horse will go in a totally different direction for a kilometer. Likewise, the small movement of a teacher, the small movement of the tongue of a teacher can have extremely large effects on the church. It may be a positive effect, but it may also be a negative effect. It may also be a negative effect. Verse 4.
Look also at ships, although they are so large and and are driven by fierce winds. They are turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot deserves. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles.
So he says to them, the small rudder on the back of a ship. Do you know what a little rudder is? It's the little thing that moves just like this. And whenever you turn the steering wheel, it'll move the rudder a little bit. And because the ship is going in water, the second that rudder moves a little bit, it breaks the current, and all of a sudden the ship can go in a different direction. So he's saying to them, the little tiny rudder that looks to be the least important part of the ship can change the direction of a huge streamliner. Can change the direction of a huge ship, can change the direction of the Titanic. That is despite the fact that there may be fierce winds. So you can have a huge boat with fierce winds and a tiny little rudder can steer it either to safety or not. Likewise, the church and congregation can either be navigated to a harbor by a little rudder, or the leader's tongue, the rudder, if it's not well controlled, what happens? Because the world blows so fiercely at the boat, because the world is so full of tribulation and darkness, then if that rudder is poorly controlled, it can lead to even greater destruction. The boat can become shipwrecked. Everyone on the boat can die. So do you see in these analogies, there's the person controlling, there's the little controller, little thing being controlled, and there's the large effect. After these two analogies, then St. James concludes, even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. So after these two analogies, James tells them, do you see how even a small tongue, even though it looks tiny, even though it's hidden by the mouth, even though it looks like it's the least important part of the body, it holds incredible power. And that power can be as destructive as a little fire in a forest. During my 40 days in the monastery, one night, I won't mention who, but one of the people in black over there decided we'll burn the rubbish. Even though there was a bushfire warning, even though there was a fire restriction, he said we'll burn some rubbish. The next morning we woke up, there was a fog, everything was dark, there was a raging fire, there were fire trucks going to put out the fire, and they came back and said, who started a fire? He said, oh sorry, we didn't realize, we're just burning a little bit of rubbish. Even a little fire can burn an entire forest. Likewise, even the little tongue hidden in your mouth can destroy a church. Beyond that, can destroy a diocese. Beyond that, can destroy the world. One tongue. One small little tongue. Do you remember, for example, the tongue of Hitler? It was a fierce, little, disgusting little tongue. But it was a tongue that killed how many people? 6 million people. At least. And that's just the direct Holocaust. What about the war that he started? What about all the people that lost their lives senselessly because of a tongue? Hence, let not many of you become teachers. Then we get verse 6. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. So it's a very complex verse that doesn't make a lot of sense when you look at it. But if you break it into its sections, it does. He says, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. This means the tongue is a fire. The tongue can be an unrighteous world. It can be something that destroys a whole body, that defiles a whole body, that corrupts a whole body. And that's why he says straight after that, the tongue is so set that it can defile the body. Because the tongue is placed in this very important, careful function of controlling the words that come out of my mouth, because of its function, it's very dangerous. It can destroy and defile the whole body. Even though it's hidden in my mouth, it can corrupt everything that I am. So because of that, because of its important function, not only can it defile the body of the teacher, so the individual teacher, the individual priest, the individual servant, but it can defile the ecclesial body. It can defile the body of Christ, the church. So everything now that St. James is going to talk about can either be based on the individual, but also on the wider church. The little tongue can either defile the physical body of the priest or the leader, but at the same time, the tongue of the church, which is the leader, the person that is communicating the word of God, he can corrupt the entire church. And then St. James says, it can set on fire the course of human existence. How many times have you seen that war begins with talk? War begins with talk. Just now, the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, who I love, by the way, is in talks with the president of Ukraine. And just then the newspaper they were talking in, they had both of their faces. And while they were settling what's going to happen, who's going to get what, how we're going to get what are the borders, what's the terms, they have the face of the president of the Ukraine, who's miserable. And they have the face of Vladimir Putin smiling, with a little bit of smile on his face. And they're saying, what's going on? Why is he smiling? Even that little smile can set off a chain reaction that can destroy a world. That can destroy a world. And then St. James says, and the tongue itself is set on fire by Gehenna, by hell. So Satan's favorite tool is the tongue. He sets it on fire, it sets the world on fire. He brings the candle from hell, touches it to my tongue. My tongue can corrupt the rest of the world. Do you know, in the 2nd and 3rd centuries, and the 4th centuries, as the church started to get less and less attacked, less and less persecuted, it started to be afflicted more and more from within. Rather than being attacked on the outside, it started to get attacked from within. Okay? So that, for example, you would have people like Nestorius, the Archbishop of Constantinople, the Patriarch of Constantinople, one of the biggest sees in the church, an ascetic, a monk, an apparent holy man. He gets up one day, stands in the pulpit and says, never will I call a baby of 2 or 3 months that can't control its bladder or its bowels, that vomits all over itself, that needs to be fed milk, never will I call that baby God. And everyone stopped and said, what's he saying? What's he saying? Then they started to realize he was saying that he couldn't call the baby that was born to St. Mary God. He said, no, he wasn't God. He was a human being. And then afterwards, when he was maybe 20, 30, God kind of put his arm around him and said, I'm with you. Okay? Whereas for us, it's very clear that Christ was God from the second that he was conceived in the body of St. Mary. One word was all he had to say to cause a massive split in the church. Arius, the guy that had the big fight with St. Athanasius, again, an ascetic, apparently holy monk, didn't even have to say a word. He invented a song. There was a time when the sun was not. There was a time when the sun was not. There was a time when the Son of God didn't exist. He just created a song because he didn't believe that Jesus existed from the beginning of the ages with God the Father. That's all he did. After that, all the farmers working in the lands, there was a time when the sun was not. All the women weaving the baskets, there was a time. That was it. One verse, one song was enough to damage the entire church for a century. Why? The tongue can be very destructive. And then in verse 8, he says, verse 7, sorry. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Every creature on the earth has been tamed by humanity. The ancient world took pride in the fact that it could control or tame all of the animal kingdom. Yet no one can control the tongue. We can tame animals. We can tame atoms. We can tame nuclear power. We can tame space. But none of us can control our tongues. None of us can control our tongues. It is an unruly, disorderly, evil, full of deadly poison. Those words that St. James use, unruly, disorderly, indicate that the tongue has an unstable, an unpredictable power. Once you let it loose, you don't know what's going to happen. It's capable of unimaginable destruction. Unimaginable destruction. Could anyone imagine that the world would go into World War II, would be destroyed, that millions of people would die because some Magnoon stood up and started talking about the Aryan race and the Jews are cursed people. You couldn't imagine that one speech could start that. But that's what happened. There was a young girl that went to a Catholic saint by the name of Saint Philip Neri. He was a really beautiful Catholic saint. And she went to him and she said to him, "Forgive me, Father, I'd like to confess." He said, "No, etfadali." She sat there quiet. He goes, "Do you have any sins?" She said, "No, not really." "Is there anything at all?" She goes, "No, I wouldn't call it a sin, but every now and then I gossip. I like to talk. I like to have a bit of a conversation with the girls, and we talk about what's happening with this person, what this girl's doing, what her dress was like on Sunday. I like to talk." So he said, "Okay, no, that's okay, no problem." She goes, "You're going to absolve me?" He goes, "No, no, it's okay. It's not a sin. Okay. Can you go home, next Sunday I'd like you to come and bring me a chicken. I'd like to eat a chicken." She said, "Okay." He goes, "But I want you to buy the chicken, and then while the chicken is still alive, I'd like you to kill it, and then bring it, as you're walking on the road towards the church, I want you to slowly pluck out all the feathers." So she said, "Huh?" He goes, "I want you to pluck out the feathers on the way to church." She said, "Why? I'll do it from home." He goes, no, on the way to church. She didn't understand. She got up Sunday morning, she got her chicken, killed it, grabbed it, and then as she was walking, every couple of steps, would she take the feathers and throw them on the ground? "It's feathers, feathers." She had no idea what she was doing, didn't understand it. She thought maybe he's crazy, Abuna's gone crazy, so she's plucking the feathers. She gets to church, and after the mass, she goes to Abuna, "I got you the chicken." He said, "Thank you. That's very nice of you. I want you now to go back and collect all the feathers that you dropped in the street for the last 2 kilometers. She said, "I can't. It's impossible. It's a windy day. The feathers have gone everywhere." He goes, "Go and collect them." So she walked down the street and tried to collect them. She couldn't find any of the feathers. So she came back crying and said, "Well, I can't. I can't find the feathers. I don't know what to do. I can't find the feathers." He said to her, "That's exactly what gossip is. The second you speak, you release feathers that you can never gather back. You release words that are scattered in the world that can never be retrieved. You start a fire that can never be put out. That's the power of the tongue. That's the power of the tongue." Now verses 9 to 10. Anyone? Yeah, go.
"If we bless our God and Father, and if we bless him, we have been made in the
similitude
of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so."
So now St. James gives them some specific examples of an unstable and dangerous tongue. He says, with the same tongue we bless God, i.e. in liturgical worship, i.e. the leader of the church. And with the same tongue we curse men who have been made in the image of God. The tongue is confused. It's confused. It's illogical. It's irrational. How can it be capable of worshipping God and in the same movement simultaneously curse the image of God? St. James says to them, out of the same mouth proceed both. This ought not be so. This ought not be so. Double-natured speech. Using my tongue for cursing and for blessing. Bless God and then curse God and the people next to me. It reveals something is wrong in me. So please, if I recognize this in myself, and we all must recognize in ourselves in certain parts, stop. Something is dysfunctional. Something is wrong. If my tongue can be used to bless God and then moments later curse the person next to me, gossip about the person next to me, speak evil of the person next to me, judge the person next to me, something is wrong. Something is dysfunctional. And then in verse 11, "Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives or grapevine bear figs? Thus, no spring yields both salt water and fresh." Each spring has only one type of water. There's either a fresh water spring or a salt water spring. You don't get nosonos. You don't get a half freshwater, half saltwater spring. You don't get a half freshwater lake and a half saltwater lake. Occasionally, and I'm just saying this, although St. James may not have been aware of this, you will get something called an estuary. You guys know about that? Do any of you fish? No? That's right. You'll get two movements of water joining, where you get saltwater and freshwater joining together. But what's the effect? Has anyone ever tasted? No? So fresh water, when you add it to salt water, doesn't produce fresh water. It stays salt water. Salt water, when you add it to fresh water, causes the water to be salty. Put salt in a glass of normal water. Tastes like salt. Get some water, fresh water, add it to some more salt water, still tastes like salt water. Because the salt water has a very, the salt has a very, very strong property. Okay? Likewise, the tongue can't be 50-50. It can't be sometimes fresh water, sometimes salt water. It's one spring, it's one well. It's either salt water or fresh water. If I'm mixing it, something's wrong. A tree can only bear one kind of fruit. You don't go to a tree and find mangoes and strawberries next to it. You don't go to a tree and you find peaches next to apples. It doesn't happen. A tree bears one type of fruit. And then in verse 13 and 14, St. James changes tone a little bit. So who would like to read for us? Anyone? Verse 13 and 14. That's it? 13 and 14. Verse 13. Okay, so St. James is now talking about controlling of the rudder. He says to them, who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. So now he's pointing back to those words he said at the beginning. Do not seek to be teachers. So instead, if you want to teach, teach by your good conduct that your works are done in the meekness of wisdom. And that means my life's aim is building the kingdom of God. Humility in wisdom. Recognizing what I'm doing. And it means not having envy, not having self-seeking. So, i.e., if you want to teach, then let your life testify first. Before you open your mouth, let your life testify. The tongue will be used for good depending on my underlying intention. Is my purpose to build up the church? Is the purpose to build up myself? Is the purpose my brethren? Is the purpose myself? Is the purpose the image of God that I see in the people next to me? Is the purpose myself? My ambitions, my career, my interests, my house, my family, my. So saying to them, there needs to be this difference. Which wisdom are you functioning by? Which way of life are you choosing? Which attitude are you choosing? Are you choosing the attitude that belongs to God, the wisdom from above? Or are you choosing the wisdom that comes from below, the self-seeking wisdom? And then he tells them, how can I be sure to do this? In verse 15, the wisdom from below that is self-seeking does not descend from above, it's not from God, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and everything are there. Whatever you do, do in the humility of wisdom. But that wisdom that directs my actions, that wisdom that directs my behavior, needs to be the wisdom of God from above. It can't be earthly, it can't be sensual, it can't be demonic. I can't bless God while I curse the people that are created in the image of God. They're signs that something is wrong. Whereas the wisdom from below is envious, it's self-seeking. And that means something that is a judgment on us. Whenever you see envy and self-seeking in your priest, in your church, in your leaders, in your boss, whatever it is, then you will find confusion there and every evil thing there, in the words of St. James. So St. James is talking about what he is seeing in the church. He's saying to them, If you look around and all you see is envy and self-seeking, everybody satisfying their own ambition, everybody in their service satisfying their own interests and not the interests of the people around them, then know that something is wrong there. They're not functioning by the wisdom from above. They're functioning from the wisdom from below. And then in verse 17, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, so willing to humble itself, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, doesn't show favoritism. And remember, we talked about favoritism before. Without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to humble himself or herself, merciful, full of good fruit, has no partiality, has no favoritism, no hypocrisy. So the wisdom from above is selfless. It's uniting. It's healing. It's restoring. The wisdom from below is selfish, self-seeking, divisive, destructive. Do you guys get what's happening here? He's saying to them, how can you control that tongue? How can you have the wisdom to control that tongue if you're the leader? How can you have the wisdom? You need to have the wisdom that comes from above, not from below. You need to have the spirit of selflessness, the spirit of uniting, the spirit of healing, the spirit of restoring, and not the spirit of dividing, of selfishness, of self-seeking. So that wisdom underlies everything we do. It's the same tongue. It's the same tongue. It's the same priest. It's the same leader. It's the same servant. But it's a different spirit. There's something different controlling it. It's the same bit in the mouth of the horse, but it's somebody different with a different spirit controlling it that actually knows how to ride a horse, not like me. It's the same boat, it's the same rudder, but the person steering the boat knows what he's doing. Do you follow what's happening there? It's the same tongue. It's the same tongue. There's nothing wrong with the tongue. There's nothing wrong with the leader. But the spirit that is from God, the wisdom that is from God, has to be in control. And then verse 18, he says something very interesting. He says, when seeds are sown in peace by those who make peace. So, the fruit of righteousness is the result of people actively, proactively going around and sowing peace. They're making peace. The idea is that peace is almost a labor. It's something that's an effort. It's something that requires all of us to work. It's not something that just happens in a church. It's not something that just happens in a family. It's not something that just happens in a workplace. Peace is the result of people working for peace, which is why Christ says, blessed are the peacemakers, they shall see God. Because you're not making peace in an environment just because you happen to be a peaceful person. People are working for peace. People are working for peace. People are being pure. People are being peaceable. People are yielding themselves. People are being merciful. People are being full of good fruit. People aren't showing favoritism. People are being merciful. And they're sowing seeds. They're implanting the seeds everywhere in the church. And the result is peace. The result is peace. So, what St. James tells us in chapter 3 is very simple. Don't speak. But if you are going to speak, make sure the wisdom that is controlling your speech is from God. Make sure your intention is correct. Make sure every time you open your mouth, you think about what you're going to say. You know the classic saying that everyone says, my mother taught me, don't say anything unless you have something nice to say. It's actually true. It's actually true. Unless I know that what I'm saying is going to build up the kingdom, I shouldn't speak. And of course, that's a judgment on myself before any of you. We have to be careful in what we say. Because our tongue, that little silly, terrible looking little thing inside our mouths can destroy the universe. But by the same token, that little tongue inside our mouths can change the place. It can bring healing, can bring reform. It can bring reform. Glory be to God. Any questions at all? Nope.